This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. We're taking a critical look at the China study with Ken Ong. He's an expert in working with data analysis and medical statistics. And he also has a Facebook site, quite interesting, Hacking Healthcare, his website, hackingmyhealth.com. And Ken, you know, I got to say that overall, if you take a look at China, notwithstanding the flaws in the data in the China study, there clearly is something going on that's undermining the health of the Chinese. Is that, you know, if you look at the typical rural villager in, say, 1950, you know, during the Great Leap Forward of Mao Zedong, where literally there was starvation, there was deprivation, there was infectious disease, there was terrible mortality. But there wasn't much in the way of cancer. There wasn't much in the way of heart disease. And now China's done a 180. China is prey to the same degenerative diseases that we in the United States, Canada, and Northern Europe are prey to: diabetes, obesity, hypertension, heart disease, cancer. So, you know, is it that they're eating more meat? Is that the problem? Is meat the culprit in spawning this terrible toll on the health of the Chinese?
Well, that's a really good question, Dr. Hoffman. I've often thought about that as well, and that is a very good observation. There has been a radical shift in the diet of the Chinese, and it's just not the Chinese, but if you look around the world at developing countries, you could see a marked difference when they were in the developing stage, and people consumed just what we call native or ethnic foods and had a native ethnic diet. And then they start to industrialize, and they start to modernize, and then they start to shift. Epidemiologists have noted this shift, not just with China, but, you know, other countries, including India. And what is the answer? Is it because of their consumption of meat? Well, I know that their consumption of meat, if you look at the data, has increased. But there are also other factors. They're eating more processed foods. They're eating more foods that are not fresh, farmers market type of produce. There are other variables that come into play. There are obesity rates may have
tremendous pollution, you know, in the pollution of the water,
absolutely,
the soil, the air that you can cut with a knife in Beijing or Shanghai. These may be factors that drive this epidemic of ill health. Correlation, again, is not causation. Something's happening, but can we pick out one variable, and that's the increased consumption of meat, and then blame it all on meat?
Yeah, well, that would be a very dangerous thing to do, just from my opinion.
Indeed. Okay. However, from your examination of studies, and I'm sure you've looked at, you know, there are many studies on that relate to whether meat is the culprit or meat is the problem when it comes to our epidemics of degenerative diseases. I presume it's not your contention that eating a lot of plant food is not valuable, right? Because clearly, the direction that this, you know, our skepticism about the China study should take us in is not like, oh, let's reject eating vegetables, let's just eat meat and, you know, processed food, and vegetables don't count. Clearly, vegetables do count, but perhaps not to the exclusion of moderate amounts of animal protein. Is that a fair conclusion to draw?
I think that is a very fair conclusion to draw. I mean, we're not here to demonize vegetables,
right?
Because And again, studies have shown that eating more vegetables, leafy greens, and multicolored rainbow assortment of vegetables is preferable to eating processed foods. Now, what we also have to understand is there is a difference between eating more if you do a comparison between the standard American diet and a plant-based diet, you would definitely notice that there is a difference between a plant-based diet and a standard American diet. In fact, any diet would be better than a standard American diet, to be honest with you. And so, you know, we are not demonizing vegetables. In fact, I eat more vegetables than I did before, and I do feel better. I eat more leafy greens, and I cook my vegetables in a certain way. So there is no demonizing of the vegetables. But I think what we have to consider is that cutting out meat or animal products completely, is that the way to go? And I have just found that the studies don't prove that out.
And, you know, another factor that's involved here is that when studying meat, most studies don't discriminate between processed meats pasture-raised organic meats, which some people who are on a paleo diet strive to eat, because we are concerned about the quality of meats in our food supply, is that, you know, you are what you eat, to some extent. And, you know, if you're eating corn-fed beef that's low in omega-3 fatty acids and high in certain saturated fats that are less desirable, maybe, just maybe, that's the reason why some studies cast aspersions on meat consumption.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And in fact, if one of the criticisms that I've been reading about with a lot of vegan-oriented studies is that they compare meat eaters to non-meat eaters.
Right.
All right. But you've got to qualify that further. The meat eaters are probably eating processed meats. They're probably eating a standard American diet. And, you know, as we have come to agree, the standard American diet is pretty bad to begin with. And so what we really would like to see, I think, would be interesting, is a study that compares people who eat grass-fed cows, and pasture-raised chickens, and drink cows from pasture, grass-fed, cows as well, and then compare that to people who are vegans. But there's no study that's been done along those lines.
Indeed, and that's a study that needs to be done. Now, let's focus on another aspect of the China study. But before we do that, I want to pause for a message from one of our sponsors. We'll be right back. This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the Zona Plus, an effective non-drug treatment for high blood pressure. It's a safe, easy way to lower your blood pressure naturally, and it's so effective it works for 9 in 10 people. The Zona Plus is a high-tech smart device that guides you through a patented therapy that's personalized to your unique physiology. To find out more, go to tryzona.com or call toll-free 888-408-6141. As a listener to Intelligent Medicine, you can get $50 off and free shipping. Just use the coupon code Hoffman at checkout at tryzona.com. Okay, folks, thanks for listening. Thanks for supporting our sponsors. Coming back to the China study with Ken Ong, an expert in working with data and analytics. Ken, you know, one big aspect of the China study is the demonization of dairy products. And I know, you know, many patients, many listeners, many acquaintances who are very, very concerned about the cancer-generating potential of dairy based on statistics that were marshaled in the China study. And it all sounds, you know, pretty plausible the way T. Colin Campbell lays it out in the China study.
Absolutely, Dr. Hoffman. One of the key things that Dr. Campbell did was that he focused on casein as a potential carcinogen. Mm-hmm. And the way he got to that conclusion was rather interesting, to put it mildly.
Yeah.
Basically, what he did was he referenced a very obscure study, I think it was from India, that talked about an experiment involving rats. So basically what happened was that rats were given aflatoxin. Aflatoxin is really peanut butter that's been, you know, left out and mold has grown on it. Mm-hmm. And so it becomes, you know, highly toxic. And so these rats consumed that, and then a study began. And then what he did was that there were rats who were fed, you know, 10 to 20% of casein from milk, which is a milk isolate. So it's not in its natural form. And what Dr. Campbell observed, or what the study observed, was that this resulted in cancer growth in rats. Mm-hmm. And as a result,
it accelerated the cancer. In other words, you were already given this cancer potentiator, and then giving them casein was like putting gasoline on the fire in terms of cancer potential, correct?
That is correct. And so the conclusion that was drawn from this was that casein causes cancer. And since casein is an animal product, therefore all animal products causes cancer.
By inference, yeah. right.
So, Dr. Hoffman, you want to talk about the logical fallacies involved here?
Okay, we have about 50 minutes. Yeah, you know, so as you may have noticed, looking around at your acquaintances and family members, most of us are not rodents. I mean, there may be a few exceptions, but most of us are not. And so, when you extrapolate rodent results to humans, I mean, we've cured so many diseases in rodents. Rodents are the beneficiaries of breakthroughs in cancer, in spinal regeneration, in virtually every disease known to man has been cured by some experimental method in rodents, but it hasn't translated to humans. And the other thing about rodents is, in spite of the stereotype that mice like cheese, in the wild, they don't really consume a lot of dairy products, except when they're suckling in early stages of life, when they're pups. But then when they're adults, they stop consuming dairy, and they certainly don't suckle to cows, because cows would trample them if they tried to do that. So, you know, that's not a really natural experimental setup, in my opinion. Am I onto something there?
You certainly are on to something, and if I could add further on to that, when you're talking about casein, now casein is a milk isolate that doesn't traditionally occur in nature. Yeah. I mean, you have to process milk in order to get casein. Mm-hmm. Okay, so first of all, you brought up that original point. Now, what casein does to rats tells us little about what traditionally consumed forms of milk will do to humans. Mm. Okay, that's the first one. That's the first issue. And secondly, the other objection I have is that casein, since it is an isolate, is not reflective of what most people, drink when they consume milk. I mean, when you consume milk, you're consuming a whole foods. Mm-hmm. And that whole food is a natural product with a series of fatty acids and amino acids and carbohydrates all mixed in, that is a whole foods. And so if we cannot conclude anything from taking one part of that whole food out, or one piece of that puzzle, and then saying, because this piece of the puzzle is problematic, the rest of the puzzle is problematic.
Well, isn't that the problem with a lot of these studies on diet? Is studies that show that if you eat artichokes, you'll be better, they pick one dietary component and they either enthrone it as a protective agent, or they demonize it as a driver of disease. And this, I think, it's problematic because we tend to eat in a very mixed fashion. We tend to eat many foods together, and clearly the net result is the result of the interaction of these foods on our physiology.
Absolutely, absolutely. You brought up a great point. And, what I'd like to also introduce is, I have, in the last 20 years, I've seen a number of interesting doctors who are Chinese medicine doctors, and they have told me about eating foods and how certain foods that may be detrimental can have their detrimental aspects negated by other foods
mm-hmm.
when you eat it at the same time or in complementing one another. And so I completely agree with you. A lot of these studies that come out have, focused on a singular component. And, we're missing out the whole picture here because there is a synergy. And I think that that's the correct word, synergy yep. or synergistic mm-hmm. Synergistic interaction between the foods that we consume together. So certain, I've heard that I've seen certain other studies that have said that, okay, eating meat or steak with potatoes is not a good idea if you do it at the same time. That's better to eat it separately. Or the other.
Combining theory, which is
exactly
folkloric at best. It's not even well substantiated. But so, Ken, help us out here because you are an expert in working with data analytics, and not all people have your degree of sophistication and expertise. Because when you see a study, you say, "I'm from Missouri." That old expression. I'm skeptical. But how can people not succumb to a facile headline or clickbait on social media when it comes to making important health decisions? What are some of the basic tips that you would advise people to do?
Well, I would advise them to step back a little, take a step back. And, for example, a friend of mine, came up one day and told me, "Oh, did you know that the WHO came out with a study that said that meat causes cancer?"
Okay.
And so I got alarmed.
There you go.
And
it's the World Health Organization. I mean, doesn't get any better than that. I mean, it could be if it were the Intergalactic Health Federation, that would be even higher authority. But World Health Organization sounds very credible.
Absolutely. And so I would suggest that people take a step back. And then what I would do is I would go beyond the headlines to read the original statement that came out. So, I brought up an example of this scary article that came out, in the New York Times that says meat is linked to higher cancer risk.
Mm-hmm.
WHO report finds.
Yeah, recently.
And so most people, recently, actually about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
So that caused me concern. And so it caused a friend of mine who was also vegan concerned that he told me about it. And so I said, you know what? As a layperson, as a consumer, I'm just going to go to the original report on the website of the WHO and read what it says. And when you look into it further, what you're going to find is that it's just they're referring to processed meats and red meat as a potential carcinogenic issue. And they say the report says nothing about fish or chicken.
Mm-hmm.
That was completely left out. And even as they said that there was the problem with this with processed meats, they said that you have to be careful how you take these under these studies. So, for example, on their website, the director of this study said, "At the same time, red meat has nutritional value. Therefore, these results are important in enabling governments and regulatory agencies to conduct risk assessment." So they said that red meat has nutritional value, which is true. So we cannot demonize red meat and put it off in the bad column altogether and completely forget about it. So we need to weigh the value that we're getting from a certain type of nutrient as well as the risks, because if you look all around you and look at what could be possibly possibly give you cancer, there are many things that could possibly give you cancer, but if you can eat it within a specific method or process, it may not be so bad. So here's another recommendation I would give.
Sure.
When you consume something, all right, you have to look at the frequency of that consumption and the dosage.
Okay.
All right. So another story that I heard a long time ago was, in terms of let's look at snake venom. All right. Snake venom has been used to, in little amounts, can cure certain types of diseases. and it could be valuable, all right? But in large amounts, snake venom will probably kill you, okay? So there could be a medicinal or a health benefit to consuming certain amounts of foods in certain small portions.
I think this phenomenon is sometimes referred to as hormesis, which is taking a little bit of something that may actually enhance your resilience or your resistance, but if you take overwhelming amounts of it, it can be dangerous.
Yes, absolutely, exactly. A very common example that I hear from my doctor is fish consumption. Mm-hmm. She warns me not to eat fish every day.
Right.
And why? Well, because of mercury.
Indeed.
But fish has important nutrients like omega-3s. And fish is a good source of omega-3s. So we have to take it within that particular context, dosage and frequency. Mm-hmm. And, that is something, that one has to really take into consideration when they're looking at all these. Because, here's another example that I had. A friend of mine who's a vegan, one day I offered her some cheese. I said, would you like some cheese? And she says, no, thank you. And I said, well, why not? And she says, well, she took a step back and she said, well, Ken, if I offered you cocaine,
ooh,
how would you like it?
Well, and cheese is a little addictive, but
yeah, and so that was the sort of the vegan mentality, mm-hmm, that I'm trying to deal with. I said, you're comparing cocaine to cheese. I'm like, okay, that's interesting, because I was trying to tell her, look, you can have a little bit of cheese once a month, and I don't think it's going to cause cancer in you.
Even if you accept the premise of the China study, probably using a little bit on your some grated cheese on your vegetables here and there, or in a restaurant they say, well, there's a little dairy in the sauce, that unless you have anaphylactic shock to dairy, which of course has zero tolerance for dairy, it's not likely to cause you devastating health consequences. I get that point.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And so it's all in moderation. And another thing that I would also recommend for people is, you can read all sorts of studies and spend decades looking at all these medical studies that have come out and looking at the statistics. All right, and then you could come up to a certain level of conclusion. But then you could also go a simpler route and maybe, look at things like, okay, where in this world do people live the longest? That could be another way of determining what the best diet could be for you. If you go that route, you could go look at the Okinawans in, mm-hmm, Japan. Mm-hmm. They have studies have shown that they have the longest lifespans of pretty much any human being on Earth. And they have a particular diet that goes along with that lifespan. And if you look in that diet, you'll see it has a lot of leafy green vegetables, seaweed, tofu that's been fermented. But that diet also includes a little bit of meat, includes fish, includes some pork, and includes some beef, but not so much of it. And so, if you want to just skip out on all these alarming studies that come out all the time, you can just say, okay, well, where do people live the longest? And let me go, check out that diet. I mean, that's another way to go.
But of course, understanding that there may be confounding variables, such as the air may be clean in the mountains, and or they have a social structure that promotes inclusivity of octogenarians and nonagenarians who have meaningful lives and have a lot of physical activity because they hike up and down to fields and participate in the social structure and so on and so on. There are many factors that are involved, including the luck of the draw, which unfortunately we can't control. Good stuff. Ken, what can we find at Hacking Healthcare, your Facebook site? And tell us about HackingMyHealth.com.
Okay. Well, HackingMyHealth.com is a website that I put up, and it you can go there and you could see my full video. And I would urge you to go see the entirety of the video. It's only 20 minutes. You can look at it over a cup of coffee, and you'll see that. And then you'll also see a link on that website to my Facebook page, where I have all these really great articles that I've put up over the last maybe year and a half, 2 years, that look at health studies and alternative medicine and things along those lines.
Great stuff for our Intelligent Medicine listeners. Ken, I want to thank you for helping to clarify some of the true facts behind the China study. And thanks for your efforts in getting the word out about legitimate understanding of statistics and research. Appreciate you coming on.
Okay, thank you very much.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.